Oh, come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a get go punt.
Touchdown, Giants.
Live from the 2015 NFL Combine at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Joined by Anita Marks, I am John Schmelk. Day two of our live program right here on Giants.com. You can get in touch and join the program on the phones at 201-939-4513 or on Twitter. A new hashtag for these two shows, hashtag NYG Combine. And Anita, let's get right to it. It's been a fun couple of days. You just got here. We're trying to survive -5-degree weather. Yeah. And we're seeing a bunch of guys work out in their underwear. It's a lot of fun.
And pretty much. At least they're warm. But that's the reason why I'm actually doing the show with a coat on, because we're actually right in front of the doors. And whenever they open up, it's just a winter blast that comes in. So I apologize. But, yes, the weather conditions here have been horrific, but a lot of great talent. It is the combine. It has become really it's a show.
Yeah.
I'd say in the past 5 years, it really has become an event to attend, to watch, to talk about, to digest, to dissect. And so I think it's, listen, that's why football's king. It's year round, right?
Over 1,000 media members have been credentialed, and one of those media members that was credentialed and is kind enough to join us right now is Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, their NFL draft expert and insider. Matt, thank you for braving the cold and being part of the program.
Yeah, I'm used to this. I'm good. I'm all good with the weather. Yeah,
well,
but thanks for having me.
We live in New York, New Jersey. We should be used to it. I'm not.
My wife, who's back in New York, we actually got into an argument on via text this morning as to who was colder. That's the
here,
point we were
I'm
at.
I'm sorry. It's here.
All right, Matt.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Matt, let's get right to it. We have the offensive linemen working out today. Obviously, you're probably not going to get quite as many, you know, top 15 offensive linemen we've gotten the last couple years in the draft. How do you evaluate right now the top of the class? Most people seem to have Brandon Scherff kind of on a tier by himself. Is that how you see it?
I do. I think it is that way. And I like Brandon Scherff a lot. Offensive lineman coming out of Iowa. I think he's best suited as a guard at the next level. I mean, you look at what he's done for the Hawkeyes. He's explosive. He's powerful. He's smart. Coming out of Iowa, you're going to be well coached to technique and angles. I think he's a plug and play star at right or left guard. Could be like a Zach Martin type player who was an all pro as a rookie. I think he's on the same level as that. So, you know, the Giants, a lot of people believe they need at least one more offensive lineman. Scherff would absolutely be a good fit, I think.
That's a big comparison.
It is. Big shoes to fill.
Zach Martin has just been a complete stud, and I think a lot of people feel that he will be throughout the remainder of his career. One thing that I do notice about the Giants is they like to draft offensive linemen that can play guard and tackle. Mm-hmm. Is there an offensive lineman that you feel will go in the first round that you can plug in at those two positions and maybe even play on both sides of the line if need be?
Well, Scherff is definitely that guy. I think you can look at Lyle Collins from LSU as another guy who played right tackle for the Tigers, played guard, played left tackle this year and really acclimated well and showed up at a good spot there. And today, what we've seen from the drills, and he's been very explosive, very athletic. And for a player of his size to move as well as he does, it's pretty eye-opening.
Let's slide to where the Giants are going to pick in the second round. If they decide to go in a different way in round one, they go defensive line. There's so many good defensive linemen in this draft, for example. And they want to get that offensive lineman in round two, picking ninth overall in the second round. Who's a guy that fits this profile? Maybe is a right tackle, could slide into guard. Mean, nasty, blue-collar, can really help in the run game and provide some power.
Well, when you think of the Oregon Ducks, you don't think of power or
blue-collar,
but Jake Fisher is that guy. I really believe he is, and he could play guard, could play left tackle. They moved him around a lot over his career. He's not the biggest guy. He's not necessarily a mauler physically, but he's a finisher on tape. I mean, he loves to complete blocks. He'll pancake guys. He likes to drive them off the sideline. So he is definitely someone who, and he might not even be there at this point. I think the more film I watch, the more I start to think maybe late first round for him. But if there happens to be a bit of a slide, I think he would be a great addition for them.
Of course, the offensive linemen and the tight ends really showed off their skills today. I know I was watching from my hotel before I made my way over here to Lucas Oil Stadium.
Hiding in the warmth. I like it.
Right. For us to do the show. And, of course, I was watching the 40, you know, and, like, what their 40 times were. And I thought it was interesting. You know, they made a point. It's not necessarily their 40 time. You're looking at their first 10 seconds.
Yes.
Because you want to see them, how quickly they're going to get off the ball. And that's what you're looking at when it comes to offensive linemen, right?
Yes, definitely. Offensive linemen should not be running 40 yards in a game unless it's to celebrate a long run. So you're looking at 10 yards. You want to see explosiveness. And, you know, from a scouting perspective, if you're watching at home, anything faster than 1.75 seconds is amazing. And so we saw some guys get close to that today. So, you know, last year, Greg Robinson and Taylor Lewan were right around that 1.7 mark. So if you're in that 1.8, high eights, you know, that's a little slow. You start to look at that differently. But that's when you're really getting picky and starting to maybe overanalyze a little bit. It all goes back to how did they look when they actually had the pads on.
Well, and let's go to the defensive line, a position that most people think this draft is extremely deep in. Somebody told me yesterday you could have as many as 5 or 6 defensive linemen go maybe in the top 10. Do you view the top of this defensive line class to be as strong as most people seem to indicate?
I do, absolutely. I think I've been saying for a couple months now, this is the year of the pass rusher. It really is. And you know, Leonard Williams at defensive tackle, he may be at one of the top 2 picks in the draft. And then you start to look at Randy Gregory from Nebraska, who I think is more of an outside linebacker, but we're still talk of pass rushers. Shane Ray, Dante Fowler from Florida. You've got Danny Shelton as a defensive tackle. Malcolm Brown from Texas could be another kid who gets up into that top 10 range.
Wow.
So there are a lot of guys. I mean, we're talking top 14 picks. There could be as many as 5 or 6 true defensive linemen.
So when you look at defensive linemen, of course, you got to look at J.J. Watt. And yeah. You go back and you look at what he was able to do during his combine, and he pretty much he was so dominant at a number of the skill sets that he did perform at. What's the one or two skill set that you feel defensive linemen really need to excel at or impress that will equate to what you anticipate them to do in the NFL?
Yeah, J.J. Watt's a great person to mention. I'm glad you did. Going back to look at his combine, you look at explosive things like the vertical jump, the broad jump. I think that we too often get sucked into the hype of the 40-yard dash. It's not that important for defensive linemen. Yeah, you want to see that 10-yard split to see how explosive their first step is, but I would take broad jump, vertical jump, and the 3-cone drill as an indicator of how explosive they are, how flexible, how agile. So those are the things that I probably put a little more predominance in looking at those numbers.
Now you take a look at these defensive linemen, and so many players now are coming out of 3-4 programs in college, and everyone says every year the guys are bigger, faster, stronger. Well, you know what? The guys on defense aren't bigger anymore. In fact, they're shrinking.
Right.
And you have so many of these 3-4 outside rush, pass rusher type of guys. Besides Fowler, who I know out of Florida can project as that 4-3 end, who else of these pass rushers that you say there are so many in this draft do you think can be that 4-3 end that can not only rush the passer but also set the edge in the run?
Yeah, there are not many. There really aren't, because like you said, guys are getting smaller. They're standing up more to use their athleticism. Bud Dupree from Kentucky is a player who, as a first-round pick, could be in that range. He came in today, 269 pounds,
yeah,
long,
that's
athletic, can set the edge. I think he's going to do linebacker and defensive line drill, so we'll get to see him move in space and you know, take on the pads as a blocker. So he would be a guy I would highlight. You know, after that, there's a pretty big drop.
Wow.
From UCLA, Owa Adigizua. It's like the best name ever. But he,
good
he,
thing you could pronounce
yeah,
it.
You got it.
That would probably take me a lot.
Probably take me a good month.
So 6'3", 270, coming out of UCLA. It was kind of overshadowed at times by guys like Miles Jack and Anthony Barr, but he was such a consistent producer for them, and I think that he's one of those guys who could actually play up on the D-line.
In looking at the talent on the edge and looking at the talent that's in the middle of the defensive line, what's the number one guy coming out on D? Is it a guy that's – I believe there's one guy, and his name escapes me. I apologize. They're comparing him to Vince Wilfork, that he's just like
– Danny Shelton.
Just a run stopper. Do you feel he'll be the first defensive lineman taken, or do you think that there's more value or more skill – in regard to an edge rusher?
I think Leonard Williams, the D tackle from USC, will be the first one taken. He is the guy who athletically is going to get compared to J.J. Watt, which is probably not fair to him.
That's not fair to anybody.
Right. So he's in that, you know, Richard Seymour, J.J. Watt, kind of a freak athletically. He'll be the first one taken. Danny Shelton could be the second one, though. We talked about so many teams going to a 3-4. You need a nose tackle. You need Vince Wilfork. You need Haloti Ngata. And he's in that similar mold.
Shelton's quick, though,
is surprisingly quick.
Yeah.
And what's funny is he's actually dropped like 20 pounds
Wow. Since
he started training for the combine. So they're trying to find that sweet spot for him. Like, you know, it's like right around 340, which is amazing.
Sweet spot at 340, right?
Yeah, he's a massive human being, but he moves surprisingly well.
One of the guys I want to touch on with is Arik Armstead, a guy that, you know, is 6'7", you know. Is he a 3-4 defensive end? Can he play the 4-3 end? Where do you see him fitting
in? I think he can play both. He's a unique guy because his body type, you would say he's a 5 technique. He's a 3-4 defensive end. But his movement looks like a 3 technique or a 4-3 defensive tackle. So I think the question mark there is when you play on the inside, you have to start to worry about leverage. And, you know, we talked about this last year with Aaron Donald for the adverse reason because he was only 6'1".
Very compact, right.
So now you talk about can you play consistently low, because if not, you're going to get dominated by centers and guard. So with Armstead, if you are going to play him on the inside, I think you just have to become very comfortable with the idea of him keeping his pads down and playing with leverage.
I'm going to switch gears here and go back to, of course, the tight ends, because the offensive linemen and the tight ends are working out today. You know, surprisingly, the Giants did get some production from the tight ends that they were working with last year, but I still think it's a position that they can improve. Talk about some of the tight ends, because tight ends are getting a lot of love here, right? The wide receiver slash tight end from Michigan.
Devin Funchess.
You know, he's a guy that I think people are looking at like, okay, well, we can use him as a tight end, as a wide receiver. But besides him, I think he's getting a lot of love and a lot of talk. But what are some of the other tight ends out there that you think the Giants might be interested in?
Yeah, Max Williams from Minnesota is probably the best true tight end. Came out as a redshirt sophomore. His dad played in the NFL, so he knows his way around the league. And he can be – he's going to unfairly get compared to, like, Gronk or Travis Kelce. I don't think he's that athletic, but he can be an inline blocker, or you can flex him out. And he can do a lot of different things for you, kind of like Greg Olsen is probably the closer comparison that I would come up with. After that, there's a bit of a drop-off. Clive Walford from Miami, great athlete. Poor numbers, which I think we would say that a lot about Miami kids this year. So a lot of potential there. Athleticism is definitely off the charts. And then a couple of maybe sleepers, Blake Bell at Oklahoma, who played quarterback until this year, moves to tight end, has shown amazing footwork and athleticism there. And then Jeff Heirman from Ohio State, who I think will be a better pro than he was college player. He was banged up with a foot injury. And they asked him to be a blocker this year because their offensive line was so young. So he wasn't used as much as he could have been in the passing game. He's going to have a great combine, though. He is a freak athlete.
Is it tough now finding two-way tight ends because of all the spread passing attacks? It's rare that you see guys asked to both block and receive now in college.
It is rare. It's hard to find those guys, which is why I think when one comes along who can do both, your eyes kind of light up.
Like Max Williams.
Max Williams is one of those guys. Heirman is one of those guys. So it is. The spread is making everything harder for guys like myself or who work in the NFL to evaluate offenses, because offensive tackles are never in a three-point stance anymore. They don't face a whole lot of speed rushers. Right. You know, if you are Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel, no one rushes the edge. It's all that mush rush to contain. So they're not seeing true pass rushers anymore. And then, you know, receivers are running to spots. They're not even running routes anymore. So the spread is affecting all offensive players, not just quarterbacks, when taking the next step.
In looking at the Giants' offense, you know, Ben McAdoo, as we know, made his way over from the Green Bay Packers. And not to say that that's the same system that Eli's. Of course, they've tweaked it. They've made it their own. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, when you look at the Green Bay Packers, not really a big tight end element there in that offense. What have you seen in the Giants' offense? And do you think that their success needs a tight end, a receiving tight end, to make it work?
I think you always want one if you can have one because of the matchup problem it creates. You know, the Packers tried to find guys. You know, they spent an early draft pick on Jermichael Finley. So I think they wanted an athletic guy. And last year they drafted Richard Rodgers, who out of Cal is a good mover for tight end. So I do think it's something that they can work into the offense. Like you said, the Giants' offense is not classic West Coast offense because they throw the ball deep a little bit more to take advantage of Eli's arm. But if you can find a tight end who can work in the zone run game and who can, you know, operate up the seam as a speed receiver, those guys are so valuable that if one's there, you go ahead and take them.
Well, because you get the great matchups on some of these linebackers that struggle covering. And, you know, we talked about the 4-3 ends. I think similarly, there aren't many 4-3 traditional Mike linebackers coming out either that can play all three downs. You got some guys that can, you know, stuff the run, you know, on first and second down, and you got to take him out of the game. Do you see any legitimate three-down Mike linebackers coming out this year?
Maybe one. Maybe Eric Kendricks out of UCLA.
That's what I thought.
And
you were
he's,
going.
You know, he's an interesting case because his best position might be Will. It might be playing the weak side linebacker. Bernardrick McKinney out of Mississippi State. I like him. He might be a better outside linebacker in a 4-3, just because of his skill set, what he was asked to do. Denzel Perryman out of University of Miami, smaller kid, loves to hit.
He's a thumper,
huge
right?
hitter. Yeah. But I think he played too heavy this year. I think his conditioning was affected by it. He wore down late in games. You can't have that from your captain on defense.
No.
So he has potential, but he has some holes in his game too.
Before we let you go, I know Raf Akiyano is going to jump on board soon as well. But before you go, I'm curious about Cooper, wide receiver, of course, from Alabama. I know that there's a lot of philosophy out there in regard to general managers. Either you draft best player on the board, period, hands down, or you draft in regard to best player also in regard to what you need
right.
as well. How do you think the Cooper kind of falls into play? Because a lot of people feel, especially after this year, 2014 was the year of the wide receivers.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I'm sure, and you saw what Odell Beckham Jr. was able to do for the Giants. I'm sure there's a team out there that you know, may not need him, but might take him early. Where do you think he falls?
I would be surprised if he's there at 9, to be honest. I think there are enough teams in the top 8, especially who need wide receivers. You know, the Raiders absolutely need one at 4. You know, Washington wouldn't be a surprise at 5. There's enough need. The Jets, you know, there are teams who I think would also love to get up there to get a receiver. So if he happens to be there at 9, it would fall into that best player available at a position we could use type thing. You know, and we all know you guys are set with Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham Jr., but size at receiver is something that could be used. And while Cooper isn't huge, he's not Calvin Johnson, he would give them a little bit more of a threat on the intermediate levels.
He's being compared to Julio Jones, right? Is that
I don't know that that's accurate.
Okay.
I think more Reggie Wayne is who he is.
Oh,
Julio Jones is a freak athlete.
Oh, he's a freak athlete.
I mean,
no question.
Kevin White from West Virginia might be your Julio Jones at this class. So, but Amari Cooper, amazing production, versatile, smooth. He will step in and have an impact for sure.
Matt, two quickies before I let you go here. You mentioned the top guys on the top of the wide receiver class. Walk me through those guys that are going to go end of the first round, middle first, maybe early second, that all kind of sit in that 6'3 range, and they really are going to, I think, when they work out on Saturday, affect their stock one way or the other with their 40 times and that sort of stuff.
That's what the combine's for, is separating similar grades. So you're absolutely right. The big three, Amari Cooper, Kevin White, Devontae Parker, they're gone.
Right.
They're off the board. Devin Funchess falls into that range, mid-first round. I think he could be off the board right in that area. Dorial Green-Beckham is the wild card
here.
He's
a because big boy, huh?
He would be my number one receiver if you didn't have the off-field stuff. But the off-field stuff is terrifying, especially in an age where the NFL is putting a lot more emphasis on off the field. So he had the two drug charges. He had the domestic violence charge. It's not a good look for him. So where he gets drafted, I have no idea right now. But I think he will be somewhere in that range. And then you have Jalen Strong from Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Another, like you said, big kid. Doesn't run exceptionally well, but he has range, great catch radius, so he falls in that area. Sammy Coates from Auburn, I think you can make an argument for him there as well. He's going to dominate here because he's athletically gifted, drops the ball a little too much for my liking, but is definitely a guy
who wants to have that
run.
The best 40 time. He's
come
out. He's like, I want
sub
the best
4.3.
I want that $100,000 from Adidas.
Who doesn't? Right? Yeah. I'm gonna try it just to see.
Matt, great stuff, man. We appreciate the time.
You bet.
Fantastic. We'll keep
appreciate
an eye on you during
always.
The next few months, and we'll have you on
so
in the as the draft approaches. All right.
Take care of my coworker here.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
we'll
thanks,
do.
Guys.
Thank you, Matt. That is Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. Does a fantastic job covering the draft. You can follow him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout.
So,
and indeed, it's funny. He mentioned Dorial Green-Beckham. He measured in yesterday at 6'4", 235.
Yeah.
There's only one NFL receiver with those type of measurements, Calvin Johnson.
And I'm not, look. And we know what he can do every Sunday.
And I'm not saying he's Calvin Johnson, but just to have that sort of speed and athleticism at that size is pretty unbelievable.
And be able to box out, especially in the red zone. Really quick, interesting story. So Adidas was going to give the top three guys who ran the best 40 time.
I didn't hear this. Okay.
A Porsche Carrera, and it had because their logo is a panther or something like that.
Okay.
So anyway, it was just this really cool Porsche with this panther coming out of the back tire. But apparently the NFL said, no. So they're giving $100,000 each to the top three times in the 40.
And we're going to be joined by Ralph Vacchione in just a second. I want to squeeze in one phone call before we get to Ralph. Osa down in Florida has been holding since the start of the show. I want to get Osa in very quickly. Osa, what do you got for us? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, John?
Doing well.
Osa speaking. All right. I was just wondering, besides the combine, did we have any intentions on bringing Mr. Chuck back? Justin Tuck?
I don't think there's any indication right now that Justin Tuck's going to be leaving Oakland, to be honest with you. But, you know, you never know. We got to see what teams do as free agency approaches. They make decisions on their roster. You never know.
Great leadership. You know, I mean, great leadership. That's when we won our championships. And also, did you think that we should attack the draft with maybe a defensive end? You know, we just go back to that strategy. Never enough touches. And maybe free agency attack the offensive line.
But also, look, and thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate you holding on for us. But as the Giants move forward here, you know this, Jerry Reese loves defensive linemen. That is no secret. That is nothing that a lot of people don't know. When they've had a lot of defensive ends, you still want to draft a Jason Pierre-Paul. So I would certainly keep that into the mix here as the Giants attack this draft.
I think a big reason for it is, you know, when you look at the two Super Bowls that the Giants have won against the Patriots, they won because they were able to get to Tom Brady and rattle his cage. And defensively, that defensive line was so dominant. So understandably so why he likes defensive linemen, especially those guys coming around the edge with their ears pinned back. Ralph Vacchiano.
And now we're joined by Ralph Vacchiano from the New York Daily News. Obviously, covers the Giants. And it's funny you mentioned Tom Brady. One of the reasons the Patriots ended up winning the Super Bowl this year. Cliff Avril leaves that game. They didn't get any pressure on Brady in the fourth quarter. Patriots score touchdowns on two consecutive possessions to win the football game.
Absolutely. And the Seahawks had talked all week about the lessons they had learned from the Giants. And it's not a secret. It's really for any quarterback. If you can't get pressure on a great quarterback, you can't stop him. And Brady, just like every other quarterback, can be rattled a little bit, just game changes. And, you know, once their best pass rusher was gone, their game plan had to change.
And no question about it. And, Anita, I think it's funny, as we move forward here, and Ralph, do you think, because to me, based on the press conferences after the season, Robert, we listened to Jerry Reese, we listened to Colin Coughlin, we listened to John Mayer. They talked about the strength and weaknesses of the team. To me, if Tom Coughlin is the man by himself making these decisions, you're going to see a lot of help up front on both sides of the football. He seemed to me, his emphasis was run the football better, stop the run better. And those are jobs one and two for the Giants as they approach this offseason.
Yeah, I think so. And it's honestly not a new approach. We've heard him talk about that in the previous season.
That's correct.
And, you know, it's the key to winning football. It's great to have guys like Odell Beckham. Obviously, that's not or Victor Cruz. Those guys, they wouldn't give them up in a million years. But they're not going to help you if you can't stop the other team's running game, get to the quarterback, and you can't protect your quarterback. Odell Beckham, as good as he is completely useless if Eli Manning has to throw the ball in 2 seconds because he's lying on his back from a pass rush. So they need to upgrade both lines, you know, whether they do it in free agency, whether they do it with the ninth pick in the draft. All that remains to be seen. But you know, the strength of the Giants' two Super Bowl teams were those two lines.
All right, so you're really active on Twitter, and you react, you respond to a lot of the Giants fans out there. They're obviously watching this program. What are they communicating to you? What would the Giants, I mean, we could sit here and say, okay, well, this is the need that I think that and you think, and but what are Giants fans saying to you on Twitter? What need would they like the Giants to go out in?
It's a family show, so I've got to censor most of what people are saying to me on Twitter. But okay. as far as what the Giants need, look, there's obviously a lot of frustration with Giants fans over the last few years. But I do get the sense that, you know, they understand that the line has to be better, that both lines have to be better. Now, I don't know that an offensive lineman being picked at number 9 is a very sexy pick, or
right,
even if you use all your free agent money on an offensive lineman, it's not sexy. I think that fans kind of get starry-eyed this time of year and think, let me get the top receiver, the great pass rusher, whatever, and there's arguments to be made for that. But I think deep down they understand that this is a trench warfare game. You need to dominate on those lines. They know that the Giants have just not measured up.
Well, I do feel that New York sports fans are a little bit more educated than I think in most parts.
Sometimes.
I do. I mean, listen, I'm from Miami. I've hosted sports talk radio pretty much throughout the country.
That's a great point.
And I do feel that New York, especially Giants fans, are pretty knowledgeable. And you're absolutely right. I mean, drafting I call them dancing bears. No disrespect. Roman Omid is off to the side here. He's going to join us a little bit later on the show.
Hi, Roman.
But no, it's not sexy. But also, keep in mind, Dallas Cowboys in the division. You saw what that offensive line was able to do and how DeMarco Murray was able to run the ball. There's got to be excitement and an understanding. Well, if that's the formula the Dallas Cowboys are using and they're having success with it, well, then let's try to emulate that.
And if you to emphasize your point, even as Odell Beckham was starting to get going last year, before he became the mind-boggling superstar that he's sort of morphed into, there were a lot of fans that were still saying, we really should have taken Zach Martin instead, because they saw what was happening with the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, Ralph, frankly, you can make the argument. I mean, look, Odell Beckham played in the games he played in. I don't know exactly what his record is in the games he played in, but you can make the argument if the Giants draft Zach Martin, they might have actually finished with more wins than they did with Odell Beckham, only because of the number of games that he played and the time it took for Beckham to morph into the superstar. I think there is an argument to be made. Not that I'm giving Beckham back. I'm not.
Right.
Let's not go nuts here. But you can make the argument. And look, the pick might not sound sexy when you make it, but when you're 12-4 going into the playoffs, all of a sudden that's the sexiest pick you could ever make.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, look, you look at what the Cowboys did. I remember writing about this last year. They, over 3 or 4 years, just used all their top picks on offensive linemen. They rebuilt that line entirely, and it takes some time. And you look at what the Giants have done. Well, Justin Pugh was a first rounder. Will Beatty, for whatever faults he has, was a second rounder. You know, Jeff Schwartz is a big money free agent, not a
Richburg.
Huge money. Richburg is a second rounder. So the Giants, it's not the same as using first round picks, but little by little, they're starting to get guys with a pedigree, with talent. They still need a little bit more. It's going to need some time to be put together. But I do think fans understand that that's the basis of winning football.
Again, we're coming to you live from Indianapolis, home of the 2015 Combine, like it is each and every year. And not only are we here to watch, of course, the players perform and they're getting evaluated by all the teams, but there are scouts, there are agents here. And I know we're, as media folk, we're mixing and we're mingling with them. What are you hearing out there in the functions and the parties and the sports bars you're attending? What are you hearing in regard to what you think the Giants are going to do with that number one pick?
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of it, from the belief around the league, a lot of it hinges on what happens with Jason Pierre-Paul. We're all assuming Jason Pierre-Paul will get the franchise tag. I believe that he will.
And based on what Tom Coughlin said yesterday, it does sound even more so like that.
Exactly. Now, if they somehow didn't franchise tag him, everybody in the world believes the Giants would then use the ninth pick on a pass rusher because they have no pass rush left. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they feel that the Giants probably will go offensive line, but when you're in the top 10, there's always the temptation for that playmaker. Another pass rusher would not, even with Jason Pierre-Paul back, a top defensive end would not be a bad idea for the Giants. They might need a safety if they let Antoine Roll go. They probably have enough cornerbacks now. Another receiver, it seems a little ridiculous, but is anybody 100% sure that Victor Cruz is going to return as Victor Cruz? And if you're not, another receiver makes a little bit of sense. So there's some feeling that, you know, maybe they can be tempted by a playmaker, but it's always followed by if they're smart, they'll stick to the plan and find that stud tackle to they'll figure out where to play him later on. Just get one of those really young offensive linemen that can play for you for 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick note here. I know we've said this before on Big Blue Kickoff Live, John, and that is in the history of the NFL, there is no case here or record to know how a wide receiver at that position could come back from a torn tendon.
Yep.
Yes, a torn ACL, MCL, ligaments, but a patella tendon.
Serious injury, yeah.
So, I mean, this is like you know, Victor Cruz will be really kind of setting a precedent in regard to what to expect. I know this injury doesn't happen often. It's not a frequent injury.
And we're probably not going to see him on the field to training camp.
I wouldn't think so. And until then, we're going to hear good reports because that's just the way it is. He's ahead of schedule. He's doing what we're expecting him to do.
He's going to start running next week, right, or next month?
Yeah, I think
March?
Tom Coughlin said soon, I think. I can't remember exactly when it was supposed to be. But the bottom line is, and I'm not doubting Victor Cruz's ability to come back at all, but we heard a lot of these same things about Steve Smith back in the day. Oh, he's ahead of schedule. He's going to make a comeback. It never happens. So it's just something you don't know. Will he make it back? Will he ever be the same? There's no way to know that. And if you're a smart organization, you've got to hedge your bets a little bit in case you're going to lose a guy like that.
And I'm not sure you hedge your bet with necessarily a first round
pick.
Right,
I'm not advocating that.
Certainly, or later in the draft, you can pick a young guy to try to work into that role. And I think it's a little too early. Obviously, if we're here, we have to do it to determine where the Giants should go with these picks until we get to free agency, Ralph.
Right.
And I think we have 3 weeks, though, before free agency even starts. What type of moves, if any, would you expect the Giants to move before we get to that free agency period?
Well, before free agency, well, the first thing they're going to have to do, I think they're going to franchise Jason Pierre-Paul.
Okay.
That'll be the first thing that I think they do. It's a little hard to figure out with the cap not being set, but we think they're going to have about $20 million in cap room Jason Pierre-Paul will eat up $15 million of that if he's franchise tagged.
And then the draft class this year will eat up even more of that number.
Right. So basically, right away, all their cap room is gone. So they're going to have to create more. So I would anticipate things like probably cutting Matthias Kiwanuka, probably cutting J.D. Walton. Right off the bat, that probably saves you roughly $5 million or something like that. I would think at some point you'll see an extension for Prince Amukamara. Maybe some restructuring of guys like John Beeson or, you know, who knows who else.
How about Eli?
That's a possibility. I think they'd like to. When I talk to people around the league about Eli Manning, there's a big divide on what his worth is and
really?
What the Giants should do.
That's interesting.
It's not – I mean, obviously, he's thought of as a franchise quarterback. The problem is the going rate for a franchise quarterback is
$20 million,
yep. Which is what the Giants are going to have to go.
What Eli's making 19, right?
Something like that. His cap number's 19. I think his salary is going to be 17.
Tell you what, quarterbacks all around the league are thanking Jay Cutler for that contract that he signed. Because they're going to say, well, look what Jay Cutler's making.
Right. And you know, and I know the Tom Brady example, he takes a little bit less for the team. He's also got a wife who's making $20 million a year as a supermodel.
And he's also four or five years older than Eli, too.
Right. So everybody believes Eli Manning is not, and most quarterbacks will not give a team a discount. He's going to get four more years, $20 million a year. The question is he really worth that at this age, or should the Giants, you know, let him play it out, franchise him next year? You know, there's a lot of, because of what he did 2 years ago, maybe you want to see his value first before you put a number on that. I don't think that's what the Giants will do. But some around the league think it wouldn't be the worst idea to let him play out the last year of that deal.
Wow.
Like, I understand, and I know there's a song written, it's all about the Benjamins, baby. Like, I get it. But I'm such a competitive person that, I mean, how much money do you really need in life, number one, okay? I mean, and let's be honest here. I mean, the Manning family, it's not only are you making, you know, of course, your salary, but the endorsements are ridiculous.
They would argue, though, it's about R-E-S-P-E-C-T and not necessarily the money.
But
they also had a song about that, by the way.
But you're right. But I'm so competitive, Ralph, that I probably would restructure because, to me, winning, there's a value in that.
Right.
There is a value in playing for a team that each year is going to be competing for a championship.
Right.
So that's, but again, that's just me. I'm not in their shoes. I mean, you know, it's very different. But.
With him, and not to bore people too much with cap figures and things like that, he's in the last year of the deal, so he can't really restructure. He's got to sign a new contract or an extension. He would be either taking market value or taking less than market value. And there's a lot of pressure sometimes on these high-profile guys, especially quarterbacks, from the union, from their agent.
That's a great
point. Tom Condon has a million quarterbacks. He doesn't want Eli taking $5 million under market value. So the next guy that comes up says, well, Eli only got $15 million a year. I'm not going to give you more than that. They want to keep the bar going, especially with the salary cap in the next couple of years is supposed to explode.
Really quick, I'm not just saying this because this is a Giants broadcast, but to me, you know what? That $5 million, I'll stay with this organization because this is a top five organization in the NFL. And for me, that's worth the $5 million. I'd rather play here than in Cleveland or Jacksonville. Do you know what I mean? So that's worth it to me.
And the flip side of that is for the Giants, it should be worth whatever they have to pay Eli Manning because the option without Eli Manning is you may spend the next 5 years looking for a franchise
quarterback. I was going to say, I mean, John Mara's got to wake up in the middle of the night thinking Dave Brown, Danny Cannell.
Right.
You know.
Right. You don't know. Now, maybe they, no pun intended, luck into an Andrew Luck or somebody like that. Maybe Ryan Nassib becomes the next superstar. Who knows?
And Tom Coughlin did say he thinks Ryan Nassib will be a starter in this league.
Right.
One day.
I don't buy that. But
he
I think that they may be trying to blow up the trade value a little bit for him. But you know, look, Eli Manning, even for the haters of Eli Manning, have to concede he's in the top half of the NFL.
Easily.
I would put him in the top 10 easily.
Yes.
And quarterbacks like that are so hard to find. Look at the bottom 15 teams in the league. That's what the Giants would be looking at if they suddenly decided, you know what, we're not paying Eli Manning. It would be a catastrophic mistake.
Just a quick note here. In regard to Nassib, let's just recall he had a really phenomenal preseason.
He did. Yeah.
Okay, when he had the opportunity, and whenever he came in at practice, I heard that he really did well at practice this year. So shout out to Nassib.
Yeah, he might be. Hey, look, he's a Syracuse guy. I love Syracuse guys. So he might turn out to be very good. But I think that the comfort level with what you have with Eli Manning compared to Ryan stepping in would be
absolutely, you just
don't know.
And no question, the coaches love Ryan. He's been in there all offseason long working. He's a hard worker. He goes about his business the right way. Final question for me, Ralph. Mm-hmm. How long do you think this quote-unquote rebuilding process is for the Giants? You know, they've had two straight seasons not making the playoffs, 7-9, 6-10. Is this a thing where you can fix this as an offseason? You get Jeff Schwartz back. You make a great pick at 9. You add some guys in free agency. Can you be back challenging for the NFC East title this year if you make all the right moves?
Great question.
I'm going to shock you and probably everybody listening by being optimistic about the Giants here. I really do believe this. First of all, turnarounds in the NFL can happen very quickly. Now, I'm not saying turnaround from what they are to 14-2 Super Bowl, but I think they can be. I think they can win the NFC East next year. I think they definitely can be competitive for that. And what I base it on is last offseason, they spent a ton of money on a lot of players that were supposed to help them, and they were destroyed by injuries. It's like all the things they brought in to help did not help them. They're in a sense, I'd like to see them, like, bring Walt Thurman back, assuming Beeson comes back again. If they a lot of these guys come back, it's like they're getting a mulligan on their offseason rebuilding plan last year and adding to it this year.
And Jeff Schwartz.
Absolutely. Jeff Schwartz, another one. Rashad Jennings, assuming he stays healthy. I know there's a lot of ifs in there, but, you know, I liked their plan last year. I thought they had built themselves into maybe a 9-win team or so, maybe 10 wins.
I agree with you.
So would I forecast them to be 9-10 wins this year? Yeah, I think that's possible, you know, especially now you look at what Odell Beckham did. Maybe Victor Cruz comes back. There's with good health, there's the possibility that this year could be a playoff team.
An optimistic.
Oh, hard to believe.
I love it. Only here at the Combine.
You got it, Ralph.
Yes,
great
you know
stuff.
It's all that late night drinking. It's really affected my brain.
Thank you, Ralph.
My
appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Thank my
you.
Pleasure.
That's Ralph Vacchiano of the New York Daily News. We thank him for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. We'll take your calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag NYG Combine. We'll have Roman Oben join us in just a second, former Giants offensive lineman. And I guess I can kind of call him a former Giants broadcaster. He's a big executive in the NFL now.
I know,
fancy
so
Roman
excited.
And we'll have Roman join us in a second. But Nina, let's squeeze in a couple calls before Roman sits down.
Sure.
He'll sit down in a second. Let's go to Luis De Jesus in Pennsylvania. He's been holding the longest. Luis, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing great. What's up?
This is a surprise. I didn't think this was real. But all right. I have a question, a couple questions actually. I'm gonna make them fast so you can get Oben in the phone. My first question is, do you see the Giants maybe? You know, it might sound crazy, but trading Eli Manning.
That sounds
for,
crazy.
Like, another first round pick or something.
That sounds
crazy.
Yeah,
I know that's what I'm saying, but. Just because he's kind of getting old. He's good, but I mean, you know, knowing JPP, if you do get franchise tag, knowing that we have to pay him next year, pay Prince, wouldn't you think that?
Oh, sounds like we lost Luis there.
No, no.
Hey, look, it's all right. I think we got what his question was. And we understand. You have a lot of guys that are coming up as free agents. You're going to want to figure out a way to pay Jason Pierre-Paul. You mentioned Prince Mukamara. We understand that. But look, here's the problem. You can pay all those other guys. If you lose Eli Manning, and look, we don't know what Ryan Nassib would do in a regular season game. We haven't seen him play in one for an extended period of time yet, Anita. All those other moves don't matter a lot because you don't have Eli Manning as your franchise quarterback.
Look, all you have to do, John, is go back and look at all the teams that made it to the playoffs and then look at all the teams that went another round and then look at the two teams that made it to the Super Bowl. I mean, you look and they all have franchise quarterbacks that you know are either great game managers like Russell Wilson or quarterbacks are going to put a team on their shoulders and go down, march down the field and win it for you like a Tom Brady, like an Aaron Rodgers. Quarterback is so key and so important in regard to success in the regular season and advancing in the postseason and winning a Super Bowl. Giants need Eli Manning. He's got to stay.
And let's welcome in an old friend.
Hey, guys.
Roman Oben, former Giants lineman.
So great to see you
here. I guess now technically, should I say former Giants broadcaster, Mr. Executive for the National Football
League? Yeah, well, we're still in I guess you could say that for now. We'll see what happens in preseason.
Welcome. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Man, good to be here. I was just thinking about my first combine experience driving from Louisville.
Talk to us. What was it like?
Yeah, driving from Louisville, which is about an hour and 45 minutes away from here, and I got in an accident. In the snow.
No.
Slammed my brakes, hit a guy in the back.
Boy.
And so, like, that last 30 minutes, I'm driving my bumper dragging on the highway. So I pulled over, ripped it off, like stuck in the trunk. I pulled up in the, whatever the it was. I think it was like a Hilton hotel with a Holiday Inn with the big train. And yeah, they still have that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's like, welcome to the NFL. So I'm glad I made it in one piece.
Oh,
so,
that's great.
I mean, kind of, what are these guys going through? Again, today, the offensive linemen, the tight ends, they strut their stuff, the 40, all the shuttle drills and everything that they had to do. How nerve-wracking is that? How nervous were they today while we were all watching them on television?
Well, I think they're not as nervous as they are, actually more prepared. And I think you looked at, you've seen the trend over the last 5 years when they started putting the combines on television. That's when you had more participation. So when I came out, I mean, John Ogden, Tony Baselli, I mean, they didn't run because you had to come to their school and get them to run. Now the guys, the pro days, now the guys that are considered the top 10, 15 guys are participating because of this, and they're doing these kind of combine type of training, high school into college. I mean, you're seeing 7-on-7 all over the place. So guys are more prepared now, and you've seen them do a lot more stuff to this point. So they're not as nervous. They're actually anxious, meaning you want to do well, versus nervous, you're not prepared.
We're joined by former Giants offensive lineman Roman Oldman. Roman will take a couple calls with us, too, at 201-939-451. If you want to get on the line, we'll try to squeeze you in as we go ahead here with Roman. With these drills, Roman, I know you were in meetings today. You weren't watching the guys that were out there. But what drills to you are the most important for an offensive lineman to succeed at here that tells you, you know what, when he gets on the field on a Sunday in the NFL, he's going to be a pretty darn good lineman?
Well, one thing, you know, obviously once you get past the size, the height and weight comparison, is a guy listed at 6'5", and he's really now 6'3.5" when he comes here. You know, so what's his minimum height?
Right.
His minimum weight? What's his strength? But in terms of the drills, you really want to see how well they change direction and if a guy is a waist bender or a knee bender. Because obviously when you're doing a drill, you don't have an NFL defensive lineman in front of you or a linebacker in front of you. You got a coach pointing one way or the other. But now you have to see if a guy can pull and suddenly change one way or the other. And then that'll determine, at least in a microcosm, like what a guy can do on Sunday, 1 o'clock, with a guy in front of him, you know, in a game-like situation.
Now, you say, is a guy a knee bender or a waist bender? Knee bender good, waist bender
waist bad. Is
bad.
Explain
why for the fans out there that might not
know. Let's take the basketball analogy. If you're defending a point guard and you're stiff-legged with knee bends, he's going to get right around you. Now,
right.
If you're shuffling properly, that's knee bends with a back and waist upright. That's a good athletic position for any sport, but in offensive line in particular, that's the best way to approach, again, moving your feet without having to lean and shift your weight one way or the other.
All right, well, let's specifically talk about the Giants offensive line, right? Will Beatty, Richburg expected to play center, Jeff Schwartz back healthy, Pugh. What do you anticipate the Giants to do in regard to going after a tackle, a guard, maybe somebody who can play both? Do you expect them to move Pugh into guard? Maybe they specifically go after a tackle. What do you envision the Giants to do right now?
Well, unless you draft a lineman in that first or second pick, that you expect him to plug him and start, a la Pugh 2 years ago, I think you have – and it's funny Schwartz actually said on the show on First and Ten that he prefers the right side guard or tackle. I mean, he said that, and I kind of asked him so that he could. So that means you could put Pugh at left guard, and now you get a guy who's maybe a pure right guard or right tackle. But the guys that are coming out now, you've got to be so versatile. If you're a guard, if you're a tackle, you've got to be able to go inside. If you're only a guard or center, you've got to be able to snap and play both guards. I mean, go back to 2011 Super Bowl season played in this stadium. Kevin Booth saved the season by starting 9 games at 3 different positions. So,
absolutely.
Having that rock star left tackle, right tackle is important, but it's also important to make sure a guy's versatile enough that he can give you the best options. And if he's one of the 5 best guys, he will start at one of the positions of need.
Now, in terms of two of the young offensive linemen that the Giants have been developing, I'm curious your perspective on the progress that Justin Pugh in 2 years and Weston Richburg in 1 year have made on the offensive line, and where do you think they should be focused on getting better to become Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen?
Well, I think Pugh obviously started as a rookie, first guy to do that since LT, and you know, took his lumps early in the year and got better as the year went on. And then year two, now you know how to be a professional, and then you had that game against the Eagles on Sunday night, obviously, but then he had the injury. So I knew he would have bounced back a lot better had he had more time to play. And I think the game that he came back, And I can't remember the game that he came back. Like, you were hoping that he came back because you didn't know who was going to start.
You're right.
So, I mean, Pugh's, sometimes when you go through your bumps and bruises early in your career as an offensive lineman, that really gives you that perspective. Like, Pugh should be a solid, you know, Pro Bowl caliber player this year.
Do you see him as a guard or tackle?
I think he could be a great guard because he doesn't have the range in terms of his arms. I think he'd be a great guard. He can pull. He can run. He's right at that 305 to 310 size in terms of weight. His height, 6'4". So he's not a tall, big, tall guy that's always got to constrict. I think Richburg, who was a natural center in college, the fact that he played guard gave him the ability to block without a ball in his hand. So it made him a better zone blocker, a better puller. So when he goes to center, now he's a better center because he's played guard.
So those skills will transfer.
Yeah, 100%.
A position we really haven't talked about since we started the show, and we're talking about the offensive linemen, obviously, to protect Eli Manning, but also to run the football.
Great point.
Rashad Jennings, you know what you get with him when he is healthy. He fits the system to a T, especially catching passes out of the backfield. Nice 1-2 punch with Andre Williams, but no David Wilson. And David Wilson was going to have a role. He was going to be a part of the system. If the Giants go out, whether it's free agency or the draft, do you think they look for that kind of running back, that type of what David Wilson could have brought to the program if the Giants go out and address the running back position as maybe a three-headed monster in that backfield?
Yeah, I mean, 100%, because if you look at the model of what's worked in the NFL, you know, Darren Sproles, Reggie Bush, I mean, these teams are using guys like that are matchup nightmares for the defense. So can your will linebacker or your safety defend a Darren Sproles or a guy like what Dave Wilson would have been? And if a guy like that is in that second, third round, or maybe a free agent guy, I mean, that poses a matchup nightmares, and that puts you on offense when you're on offense. So that puts you in attack mode.
You want to take a couple calls, Roman?
Yeah, let's do a couple.
201-939-4513. Charlie in Portland, Maine, our good buddy, is on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Charlie, welcome to the show, my friend. Hope you survived
the
snow.
Hey, John.
Up there.
How y'all doing?
Doing yeah. Well.
Roman?
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, tell my cousin I said hello. I miss Ralph.
Okay, no problem. Charlie's last name is Vacchiano.
Oh, right.
There you go.
Okay, no, I get it. I'm slow today.
Hey, I got a question. I guess it's when you're talking about Eli, and all, you know, you kind of brought it up, John. All I have to do is say Phil Simms. You know, we did that with Phil Simms. We said, nah, you can't play anymore. Let's get rid of you. We got Dave Brown, and look what happened. It was a disaster. Yeah. Eli is our franchise quarterback. He needs to stay, and I'm massive nice, but he is not. Eli won 2 Super Bowls, MVPs, won the game, biggest games in 2-minute drives. I mean, this guy is clutch. If I was a coach and I had a quarterback, I was going to pick, like, who do I want in the Super Bowl in the last 2 minutes to win the game for me? It wouldn't be Joe Montana. It wouldn't be Brady. It would be Eli Manning.
Wow.
Period. End of story.
No, I mean, that's great optimism. And I think,
thank you, Charlie.
Charlie, and I think fans, you know, kind of need to understand that, you know, as a player, you know, when history's been on your side, I mean, you're almost – it's almost a bad thing because you know what you've been able to do in this league. You know you've won.
So there's expectations.
Yeah, the expectation goes a lot higher. Mm-hmm. And people, including yourself, when you look in the mirror every day, you want to get back to that level of play. And Eli Manning obviously is a clutch guy when he gets to that point. I mean, he hasn't, but he hasn't gotten to that point, or the team hasn't gotten to that position in 4 years. So you hope that through the diligence of the scouting, coaching, you know, the improvements that have been made, you know, Spags is back defensively. You hope you get a defense that can create turnovers and give you the ball in the plus territory. And I mean, all that helps a quarterback. You know, the best friend of a quarterback is a running game and a solid defense. Then you throw the ball when you want to throw it, dictating third downs, et cetera. So, but definitely Eli Manning, in terms of the landscape of the National Football League, he is a quarterback that a team, he's one of the teams that you don't have to worry about because you've got the quarterback position solved. And there's only, you know, less than a dozen, probably half a dozen teams I can say we definitively have a quarterback solved. Not a guy we know that's going to start next year, but that position is solved. Now we got to build around that.
Well, yeah. The worst place you can be is showing up at this combine and saying, oh, man, we got to find the quarterback. That you don't want to be
there. No, you don't want to, because there's 9 out of 10 times it doesn't work.
Here's a list of a few teams that are on the market for quarterbacks. The Bills, the Jets, the Texans, Cleveland, the Bucks, Tennessee. possibly the Rams. I know that Jeff Fisher came out and said that they're committed to Sam Bradford, but, I mean, how many times are you going to go to that well before, you know, unfortunately you just can't stay healthy?
You're right.
The Bears, John Fox, Foxy came out, said that, you know, he's not necessarily committed to Cutler being his starting quarterback. And then, of course, the Eagles. A lot of people anticipating the Eagles to try to trade up, Chip Kelly, trade up, go get his Oregon quarterback, Mark Mariota, to quarterback and possibly trade Nick Foles. So there are a lot of teams on that list and a lot of teams that have been struggling for several years. Why? Because they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, Nina, it's funny you mentioned, that's about eight teams you mentioned. And you look at the bell curve. The eight teams that are always in need for a quarterback, there are eight teams on the other end that at least have a guy, a solid guy, whether you're a Tom Brady or whoever, or Eli. But then the rest of the league, 16 teams are in the middle, whether they've committed to a guy and maybe they're short term and they want to get to that first tier.
Or they're waiting for a Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, verdict is out on a couple of these guys, whether or not, or they go back to that end of the bell curve, or they're here this time next year needing a quarterback.
And the shame for some of those franchises too, Rams, great defense, but they can't score enough points.
Right.
Bills, great defense. They had Kyle Orton last year, he retires.
Yeah, EJ,
can't score enough points. Browns, pretty darn good defense last year. What happens? You can't score enough points. Why? You got to find that quarterback. Back to the phones at 201-939-4513.
They spent their first-round draft pick on a quarterback. He just has not panned out.
Well, and now that's one of the guys where you're waiting to see.
Right.
And you're seeing if he can pan out, and who knows if that's going to happen or not. John in New York is next. John, what's going on, pal? John, you with us? John going once, John going twice. John is sold. We'll go to the next. Go ahead, Nina. I'm sorry.
Do we have him now?
John, are you there now? No, we lost John.
No.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a point as well in regard to, I know we're spending a lot of time talking about Eli Manning. Come on, we know he's not going anywhere. But the excitement, at least for me, okay, based on how the season ended and how strong Odell Beckham Jr. came onto the scene, I mean, I'm really, like, I'm excited.
Yeah, you should be.
But you remember, and before the season started last year, we were talking about Eli having to learn a new offense. We really didn't know what to expect. Odell was dealing with hamstring issues, this and that. Well, I mean, I am legitimately, like, excited because I think the chemistry is going to build. You know, what is Victor Cruz going to be able to do? Who do they go out and add to this offense in regard to free agency at the skilled position? I think it's an exciting time, and I commend Odell Beckham Jr. as a rookie for kind of bringing us to this point. Bless you.
Yeah, sorry about
you okay?
that. Yeah, I'm good.
I know, and sitting in front of these doors with the.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well,
I haven't
taken
off my jacket.
There's a lot of excitement about Odell Beckham, obviously, and he deserved everything he's gotten. He won all the awards. But in terms of the team approach, I mean, you still want to see the running game solve the protection. You want to see a good, solid 1-2 combination. I mean, look at what Julio Jones and Roddy White have done in Atlanta. That hasn't translated to going to the Super Bowl, unfortunately. So, I mean, we have to have that discussion, too. So, the excitement in terms of the numbers. And, I mean, look, I'd love to see they both catch anywhere north of 80 catches. And one has more touchdowns, one has more yards or whatever. But in terms of the team approach, I mean, I think the team is better definitely with Odell Beckham if he builds on last season. And I'm optimistic as anybody look at what happens next year with Cruz's return. But there are a lot of other pieces that have to come into play so that he's making those plays in January and not in a losing effort against the Dallas Cowboys, which is still like, I don't know how many million YouTube hits or whatever that video has gotten thus far.
201-939-4513. Our good buddy Jeff is up in Rhode Island. Jeff, how's everything, my friend?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Jeff.
Just a note to Anita. Anita, there's plenty of knowledgeable Giants fans in Rhode Island, okay? I just want you to know that. They all don't live in a metropolitan area of New York.
I'm sure there are.
But anyway, Johnny, what I wanted to get at was in terms of the salary cap, I don't know if I'm on board at throwing $15 million at JPP. You know, if we do that in between the Eli Manning situation, it's not going to leave us in a very desirable spot, I don't think. So, I don't know. How do you think it's going to play out? I mean, we need money to sign other players as well. And as I said before, I'm not on board throwing $15 million at JPP. So I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Jeff. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Roman, go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, one thing I do know about the Giants' approach, they're never going to compromise the salary cap for one guy. I mean, you'll never see an Albert Haynesworth, you know, type of signing. You'll never see, you know, what other teams have done in terms of just blowing up the cap and hoping one guy does it all. But it always works in the integrity of what their philosophy is. And so if that philosophy means a franchise tag to keep JPP while they work the salary cap going to the next year to sign a long-term deal, then that's what they'll do. And they've lost players because they didn't want to give too much money than what they thought that player was worth. So it all becomes – it always goes back to what each organization values that player, and whether it's $2 million or $15 million doesn't matter. Well, can it fit the integrity of the cap and not ruin the integrity of the team?
And here's the problem. Let's say you decide, all right, well, Jason Pierre-Paul is not worth $14.6 million, whatever the franchise tag ended up being. You still have to replace him. It's not like, it's not like there's another defensive end sitting there on the free agent market that's going to give you Jason Pierre-Paul's production that's going to sign for $7 million. If that's the market, that's the market. And even, these guys you want to draft in the first round, you have guys that have, look at Jadeveon Clowney last year, a can't-miss pass rusher, right? What did he do? He got hurt. He didn't play. DeMarcus Ware in his first year in the league only had 4 or 5 sacks. I mean, it takes these young guys a while to grow into the NFL and become dominant players.
I played with Michael Strahan for 4 years. My first year was his fourth year, 4 or 5 sacks. They draft Cedric Jones. He has to move the other side. Cedric Jones has the eye problem. Then Strahan becomes a Hall of Famer at the left end. He didn't start really dominating until his fifth year. I mean, then he went for 10 years run, but it's, JPP had a lot of success earlier, and I think to some degree that hurt him because he had to still learn how to become a football player. And he's learned that over the last 2 years, his tackles for losses, his defense against the run, all that's improved. I mean, we always want to see 15 sacks, 20, we all want to see that number, but I mean, ask J.J. Watt, like, he's a complete player. Run, pass deflection, interceptions, touchdowns. I mean, and I think JPP has that ability, but again, that early success, I think, sometimes kind of ruined the fans' eyes in terms of what he really has to do to become a complete player where you can just check that box for the next decade at defensive end, and that's what the hopes are for JPP going forward.
Also, I had a chance to talk to a general manager, and he said his formula, and again, every general manager is different, I get that, but his formula, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, is you want to spend your money on quarterback, tackle, left tackle, quarterback, and corner.
Corner.
That is your formula in regard to where you want to spend your big money. Now, you have a price tag. I'm sure the Giants have a price tag on what they'd like to pay JPP. Look, we saw it with Kevin Boss, right? I mean, the Oakland Raiders came at $7 million a year.
They came in with a huge bonus.
It's not like the Giants didn't want Kevin, but that was a number that they weren't willing to pay for
him.
Even
more recent.
So a lot of it is – I'm sorry, but really quick, a lot of it is going to depend on, if JPP tests the free agent market, what are other teams – are other teams who don't follow that formula, Roman, what are they going to throw at him? And is that in the range that – Jerry Reese and the Giants have allotted for him in regard to what they're willing to pay for him?
Well, you obviously take that risk, and from a player standpoint, you have to earn the right to make it difficult for the team to keep you and make it luring for another team to sign you. And let's go back to Martellus Bennett a couple of years ago.
Linval Joseph, too, another guy.
People have been saying, oh, man, you wish you had Martellus. But the Giants were never going to give him what Chicago Bears gave him. But, hey, good for him. He wasn't a Pro Bowler this year. He's obviously been an integral part of the Bears, but he didn't fit the now he could have played for minimum and stayed in New York, but that was never going to be the option. So,
that's economics.
Yeah, I think, again, I always try to argue from a player's point. Look, we're all going to be 40 years old one day, and you got to be happy with the decisions you made and be glad that you played as long as you did. And whether I think sometimes when you look back, whether the number is $3 million or $4.5 million, like, it really doesn't matter. Moving your family around and all that stuff, and I don't know if that's important to JPP or some of these guys at this point, but I know at the end of your career, those kind of things are important, winning a Super Bowl and all that stuff. But you just hope that all the sides, all the variables come together, and it's favorable on the board for everyone.
Roman, thanks so much for the time, my friend. It's very much appreciated.
My pleasure. And I love the suit tie game. I mean, you're Wall Street ready today, man.
Yeah, man. This is the big time. The whole NFL
you brought
world
New York
is
to
here.
Indianapolis for real, man.
You got to look good, baby.
I love it.
Thank you, Roman.
Thanks.
It's great seeing you, my
All
friend.
Right, thanks.
Good seeing
Get
you.
Get home
yeah.
safe. That's
Congratulations
Giants offensive
on your
line.
On your new job.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
How's that going, by the way?
It's going well. I met with USA Football today, and I'm on the National Football Advisory Committee and talking about solving the youth tackle football issue, and we'll definitely have some news later on.
Well, and it is a big issue, and it's a big deal. So thank you very much. We appreciate it, Roman, and best of luck. All right,
yeah,
man.
My pleasure.
Former Giants offensive lineman Roman Ovid, we thank him for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll have Jason Lockhon 4 from CBS in just a second. For now, let's take one call before we have Jason. That's Justin in New York. Justin, thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up?
How are you doing? I have a question. Do you think the Giants will consider drafting a defensive back or picking up a defensive back in free agency due to the injuries of Prince Mukamura and Walter Thurman III?
Well, I mean, if you talk defensive backs, you can put safeties into that mix. My answer is absolutely yes. I think corner is less of a need, but I think Walter Thurman is a guy they would love to have back at the right price, considering they lost him so early last year with the injury.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep in mind, I mean, we talked about this going into last season. I was even saying, I think you were as well, that we thought with all the talent that was in that secondary, that the Giants were going to have a top five, top three secondary in the NFL, unfortunately. They fell to injury, and it didn't work out that way. But there's so much talent there, and I'm sure they want to try to keep as many guys as they can. The big question mark, of course, is Antro Roll.
Hey,
can they afford it?
And you need to have four or five good corners in the league now, the way these passing attacks are. So, Justin, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And now we're joined by Jason Lockhon 4 from CBS, and he's already on the phone, tweeting, texting, talking to the people in the league. He's got all the inside information. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, good
friendly
seeing
handshake,
you.
Anita.
All right, so what's the buzz here at the Combine? Let's start with the actual draftees first. Obviously, we still have a couple days of workouts left to go, but what's the early buzz here that's things that have maybe taken general managers by surprise that they're talking about?
I don't know if there's you know, anything that's really thrown people off. Some guys maybe came in a little smaller than you thought.
Randy Gregory.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's always that. But you come to the Combine knowing. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really a shocker anymore. I mean, those kind of things happen. No, I guess there's sort of been dueling reports about Winston. I know somebody came out in the middle of the week and said he's definitely throwing. I've never heard that he is throwing. I'd heard all along that it's very unlikely he would throw, and I don't think in the end he will. And now we'll see what's going on with his shoulder. But I find for me, and I think for a lot of the teams, the Combine is much more about, okay, there's the measurables and the medical for these players, and that's standard, that's across the board. But then it's each team starting to really get into its off-season in earnest. It's about meeting with agents for your players. It's about meeting with agents who may happen to represent some prospective unrestricted free agents from other teams, maybe. And there's certain boundaries you can and can't cross, and different teams go about it in different ways, but there's always going to be a certain number of players who you know, hey, at the price point we have them right now, they're not feasible for next year. So how much negotiating room is there? Would this guy take less to stay? Would that guy take less to stay? What could we do to move this cap number around? It's about getting your house in order so that you can then determine these budgets and then go out and truly start spending that money next month.
So obviously the biggest storyline going into this draft is the fact that the Bucs have the number one pick. Tennessee has the number two pick. And so what quarterback is going to go number one to the Bucs? Because they did say goodbye to Josh McCown. I'm hearing that Marcus Mariota's interviews have been unreal, very comparing it to Russell Wilson's
not a surprise.
Yeah. Interviews.
No, exactly.
I had the opportunity, of course, we both work at CBS Sports Network when Marcus Mariota came
after
in
the Heisman
for the show, and we were able to hang out and touch the Heisman. What a fantastic young man.
Special kid.
Special, very, very special young man. Where, of course, on the opposite side, you're hearing Jameis Winston more NFL ready based on the mental aspect.
Yes.
And the way that he can read defenses, but such a big concern off the field. In your time here in Indy, talking to agents, talking to owners, talking to scouts, what are you hearing? What do you think the Bucs are going to do with the number one pick?
I think the Bucs are already pretty comfortable with Jameis Winston, the human being.
Really?
The work they've done.
Wow.
And they've done a lot of work, and it started before the Senior Bowl.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I think they'll only continue to be impressed with him as ownership gets to spend time with him, as he comes in for a visit and throws for them. They're going to put him up on the board. He's going to show he's a pro-ready quarterback, at least from the mental aspect of the game and reading defenses and what Jimbo Fisher taught him. He was coached very hard. He was coached like a pro in college. I think they're going to find out that he's a somewhat silly, immature kid, but not a bad kid, not a bad seed, not someone who they feel like is going to upset the apple cart and turn our franchise on its ear. I think he's going first overall, and I believe that the Bucs, as this process plays out, will be hoping that fans and other people can sort of get the same sense that they get, that, yeah, this is a kid who may have made some mistakes here or there, but is someone you know, who with maturity and with the normal development that everyone goes through, not just football players, could be a leader of their organization.
And I think it's interesting when you look at Mariota then. You know, teams can do work on Winston. You can talk to people, find out what type of person he is. You really can't do work to figure out if Mariota can drop back, read a defense, go through projection his progression, stay in the pocket, and compete against NFL defenses. Teams are going to really, frankly, have to roll the dice a little bit on that,
absolutely,
aren't they?
There's no way to simulate that. There's no spring developmental league where you could go watch a kid play a few, six games or whatever before you draft him. This is it. All the evidence is in terms of the game tape, and that's not going to change. And recently, the spread guys, the guys who hadn't been under center much, the guys who had always been in shotgun, you know, the results have not been good across the board. So not to say that none of them have success, but by and large, it's, you know, the pendulum seems to be swinging the other way. Yeah. I still think the kid will go high, but I don't know that he goes necessarily to a team where he's absolutely positively has to start from day one.
I would hope not.
You know, so that's the thing. People talk about Chip Kelly trading up.
I was just going to go. We're talking about teams really not knowing, knowing him well, knowing what his strengths, his weaknesses are. If there's one guy who knows better than anyone else, it is Chip Kelly. He has a lot of control, a lot more control this season than he did last. What are you hearing? Do you feel he is going to wheel and deal and try to move up?
I don't know that he or anyone goes up to two to do it. Maybe somebody does. For him, it'd be such a big jump. It'd be a pretty big jump for Cleveland also. But I think if he gets out of that top five, if he's at that Jets pick, I think the Jets will be open for business and hoping Cleveland, Philadelphia, whomever goes up and gets him. But you're right. If it's Chip Kelly, there's going to be a unique pressure. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Well, he knows this guy better than anybody else, and he's given all this up to get him. And Nick Foles is the other guy there, assuming Foles isn't part of the trade package to move up. So then, you know, is he going to start from day one because it's Chip Kelly and such a great offensive
and
mind
system,
and all that?
And that system's
right.
going to fit him.
He seems to fit. But, again, he's still going to have to make reads. He's still going to be much more asked of him than was asked of him at the college level, and I don't know how quickly that calibrates.
You know, Jason, you mentioned how this is the combine for the draft, obviously, but a lot of work and business being done in the NFL, and free agency comes a lot quicker than the draft does. So let's focus in on the Giants here for a second. Last year, Jerry Reese, uncharacteristically, extremely busy and quick and rapid in free agency. How do you see the Giants' offseason plans kind of forming for this offseason?
Yeah, I think it starts from within, and it's figuring out. I mean, I heard the caller talk about Walter Thurman before I came in, and obviously Jason Pierre-Paul is the number one sort of organizational I won't say it's an obstacle, but situation to figure out.
Hurdle, how about that?
Hurdle, yeah. And can they make that happen on a long-term deal, or do they go with a transition tag, or are they able just to go ahead and put a franchise tag on them, even at that number? So I think that really sets the table for everything else that they do. I think a lot of their growth will continue to come from within. I think the draft will remain their lifeblood. I just don't see them as a team that wants to or has to set the market across the board, you know, try to get four or five, six starters every year in free agency. A, it doesn't work. It's not really what they believe in at their core. Now, they want to use it judiciously to find some value here or there. I think a lot of it, though, is you know, guys like Prince and getting him healthy and trying to keep him healthy, getting a Victor Cruz back. You know, there's a lot of ways where all of a sudden you look at your roster from your last game, you look at your depth chart, and all the guys from IR aren't on it, right? And then the offseason starts, and you take those guys off of IR, and you stack them back, and you're looking at your 70, 80 guys under contract. All of a sudden, your team looks a whole lot better. Now, I think those guys have to stay healthy, obviously, and everyone has to stay on course with their rehab. But I think a lot of their growth comes from within, and not just personnel-wise, but year two with McAdoo and all the strides they showed last year. And then you get a Cruz back in there and a second year with Eli in this system. And I didn't mention, and obviously extending Eli, I think, has to be a priority as well, but that's a slow market to develop.
What about Antrell Roll? What's the landscape out there in regard to free agency when it comes to safety?
There's not a lot. There's not a lot out there. There really is, and I think the Patriots will franchise McCourty. So I think.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I do. So even at this stage of his career, I think there'd be if he hits the open market, I think there'll be teams that are interested. You know, and that to me is a situation. I think you can look at most teams and find a guy or two where it just makes sense for all parties to see. Whether it's because a guy, not in this case, but a guy has off field, or a guy's coming off an injury, or a guy is advanced in his career. Maybe you need to let a couple teams actually put formal offers on the table, and then you see, does it make sense for us to match, or doesn't it?
Final question for me, Jason. How do you see this free agent market playing out? Is this going to be a market where we've seen the last couple of years? You have about a quick, rapid movement up front, and then you're going to have that 2 to 3 week low, and then those middle and low guys will start slowly getting picked off.
Yeah, I think it's the same as normal. It's not a great group to me. I look at you look at these guys on paper, especially when the franchise guys are picked out, and then some guys will get extended before the market opens. It's the worst class I've seen, frankly, to me. I don't see a lot of game changers there. But teams have cap space. And you have to spend in the CBA 89% of the cap. So these middle-tier guys will get top-tier money in the first 36 hours of free agency. And then I think it will cool down. And then the owners' meetings are about a week in. Everybody gets together there. That sort of starts the second wave of free agency. And then we're kind of out.
And you do expect a lot of franchise tags in the next week?
I think at least four and maybe five. I think there's seven or eight teams that have decisions to make, but I think McCourty gets franchised.
Dez
gets franchised for sure. Demaryius gets franchised for sure. I think I'm forgetting somebody. There were definitely four I sort of had.
McCourty you had before.
McCourty, yeah. There's still somebody else I'm not thinking of right now. But.
JPP.
Oh, Justin Houston.
Justin Houston, absolutely. And then JPP, I wonder if it's a transition or something like that.
Okay, my last question for you. We were both out in Arizona. We spent the week out there leading up to Super Bowl, and probably one of the biggest topics amongst media and was there's this thought that Adrian Peterson is out of Minnesota and ends up in Dallas.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise
Adrian
me.
Peterson behind that Dallas offensive line would be sick.
Yeah.
It would be dumb in a good way, of course. Just absolutely dumb. I mean, are you hearing that? I read before I came in today, Adrian Peterson came out and said something. Oh, you know, I'm not getting a good feeling about going back to Minnesota. So I think we're seeing it develop. But what have you heard? What do you know? How realistic is that?
I think it's very realistic. Now, again, with him, it's going to have to come down to financials. Minnesota say they want him back. I talked to Rick Spielman the other day. They won't commit to what price. I don't think they want him back at $13.5 million a year. So that's where his leverage comes in because he says, well, I'm not going to renegotiate with you. So
what's
if you want to trade me
if they cut him?
It's nothing. It's scant. It's like 1.4 or something. There's no dead money issues. There's no cap issues. There's no cash issues. It's just a matter of can they find a middle ground. I don't think he wants a middle ground. And if he thinks Jerry Jones is willing to pay him, maybe not 13, but 12 or close to it or whatever, I still wonder if it ends up being a trade. I would think Minnesota would want some value for him, and I could see something happening. You know, the problem here, too, though, is it's April. That the earliest he gets reinstated, unless he wins his court case, would be April 15th. Who's going to have the wherewithal, the cash to bring him in? I suspect Jerry keeps a little something on the side for him, especially if DeMarco Murray's already walked off someplace else by then.
Do you think Murray's going to give me one of those first guys that gets that big $50 million contract or something and walks?
I don't know that he gets the kind of money that he may think he can get. I don't know that he gets $10 million a year. You know, can he get close to Shady McCoy in that 9 range? Maybe. I'm not sure. Marshawn Lynch, I think, will be the first chip to fall, and that'll be interesting to see. I know they're going to play around with his contract. I know he's threatening retirement, but
I think
money will ultimately talk when that number gets right. And so where is that number? Is that number right at McCoy? Is it just under McCoy? You know, that could help DeMarco Murray a little bit, but I don't think he's getting anywhere close to Peterson money. I don't think he's getting 10. Does he get 8? I don't know.
Jason, we appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks
my
so
pleasure.
Much.
Anytime.
Great stuff.
Always great
Thanks.
Having you on.
Great knowledge and insight from Jason Lockon, 4 from CBS Sports. Thank him for joining us here at the Combine in Indianapolis. All right, guys, we got a couple calls on the line, I think. Let's see if we can squeeze them in before we say goodbye, Anita. 201-939-4513. We got Bob in Sacramento. He's been holding. Let's squeeze him in before we say goodbye. Bob, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, man. Honored to talk to you both.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the call. That guy just answered a lot of my questions. I find it curious that a lot of people call in and say that they don't want Eli. We should trade Eli. I think that's just ridiculous. And as a lifelong Giant fan, that there would be nowhere else left to go. But I am asking you. Jerry Reese needs to recognize good talent for the offensive line. Do you guys feel that who would be number one on the list for the offensive line, and I appreciate you taking my call, and I'll watch you. I watch you all the time.
Well,
thank
Bob,
you.
Well, Bob, Bob, bye, Bob, 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 what, real quick, yeah. Do you mean top offensive lineman in the draft or in free agency?
I think he meant the draft.
In the draft. In the draft. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we answered the right question.
I know
Bob,
that you have
call.
A ton of notes because they're sitting in front of you, so I will let you.
This is like 3 weeks worth of work.
I know.
Here.
I mean, know. So I'll let you dive into this.
All right.
One.
Let's see offensive line. I got my sheet coming up right here. Okay. I think the. There, the one guy that I think is the shoo-in in the top 10 Anita is Brandon Scherff. We heard Matt Miller talk about him at the top of the show.
He tweaked a hamstring today.
He did, yes, and we should bring that up. For an offensive lineman, a hamstring injury, not that big of a deal. It's probably the last time they're going to run a 40-yard dash in their lives. So I don't think that's going to take a hit to his value or anything like that. To me, here's why I like Brandon Scherff. And I think the Zach Martin comparisons are good. Not necessarily that he's going to be a first-year all-pro, but his skill level and his talent to either be that blocker out at right tackle. I don't think he's a left tackle in the NFL. I think he's a right tackle that has strength and can help in the run game, or he can move the guard. And again, be that down and dirty, Richie Seibert, blue collar, nasty streak, knock guys around inside. And I think that's what this offensive line really needs. So I think that works. The only other guy I think that I would take with my first round pick, and I'm not sure if his value is high enough right now, is Lael Collins. And he's a guy we talked about earlier in the show too, because he has that nastiness. Look, I think the protection for Eli, in my opinion, was it great? No, but it was good enough the last 7-8 games of the year. Once you got past that bad game against the 49ers.
They found those five that gelled and was able to.
They did.
You know what I mean? A lot of times, offensive line, it might not be the top five skilled position guys, right? But somehow, some way, those five guys gel and make it happen.
We say hello to Roman Obadi.
I know. I was about to.
Be good, Rome. Appreciate it.
All right. Here's my question for
yes,
you,
what do you
before
got?
We do sign off.
But
and
bottom
is,
line, though, and I want to get back to the point real quick. Offensive line, I'm worried about running the football. I want the guy that can push the line of scrimmage. And the pass protection, I think, will be good enough. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Last question. Will both these guys be available at 9?
I don't know if Scherff will. And I think that's the trick. And that's why I
all
think...
All right, I lied. I've got another question for you. If he's not available at 9, what team do you think is in the market for him other than the Giants?
Well, we had Rob Rang on yesterday, and he has him projected at 5 to the Redskins.
Okay.
He thinks the Redskins will do an uncharacteristic Redskin move and pick this solid, you know, non-sexy pick and try
Dan
to shore up that
Snyder
offensive
going
line.
Going with a dancing bear.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think Collins will be there. I don't think you're going to get two offensive linemen going in the top 10, but I think there's a good chance Scherff's off the board, and I've kind of made this point the last couple weeks. That's why I don't think you can let free agency pass without adding somebody. Because the last thing you want to do, Anita, is back yourself into a corner when you get to drafting and say, oh man, we got to get a starter at this position no matter what. And that's the last thing Jerry Reese wants. You know his best player available philosophy.
Right. So
and you want to be able to stick to it.
Exactly. So if that's your philosophy, best player on the board, period, hands down, regardless of need, then you want to make sure that you really don't have a sore thumb need sticking out there.
And I think the other spot where you could have a sore thumb need, theoretically, is at safety. You know, you only have two guys on the roster right now, and Cooper Taylor and Nat Burhey. Cooper Taylor hasn't stayed healthy. Nat Burhey hasn't proven he can play as a starter in the NFL. Yet a lot of people think he can. We'll have to wait and see. He's going to have to earn that spot.
Right.
But you have two, maybe three safety spots you're going to have to fill here. Do you do that in free agency? Do you try to wait for the draft for one of them? I think that's one of the spots where the Giants are going to have to be pretty aggressive early in free agency.
Well, it's been a fun
I had a lot of fun.
Hour and 15 minutes. Great guest. That's what's so great about, of course, doing a show live here from the Combine in Indianapolis, because you've got media, you've got owners, you've got coaches, you've got scouts, you've got, I mean, it's just, it really is a great time.
No question about it. And we did Thursday and Friday this year. You know, we're growing. Maybe we'll do Saturday next year, too.
Let's do it. I say we do all week next year.
Well, it only starts on Wednesday.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe
you'll
be
here by yourself with nobody else.
Wednesday.
Thank you a lot, dude. I appreciate
it.
Thank you. Great time and a lot of fun. Callers, good job as always. Good job on Twitter. We thank our guests. Let's see. Matt Miller, Ralph Vacchiano, Jason LaConfora, and our good friend Roman Oben. There we go. And our thanks to our guests yesterday as well for joining us. And thanks for being with us all weekend long. We have continuing coverage of the Combine on Giants.com. A few more interviews with scouts, draft experts, national media guys. And as we keep an eye on the workouts as they continue through Monday, when you have the final group, defensive backs, corners, and safeties, come your way from Indy. For Anita Marks, the frigid, frostbitten Anita Marks, I am John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us in Indianapolis on Giants.com. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody.
we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get the punch?